Welcome to Jazz Happens, the podcast discussing jazz in St. Louis from the artist's perspective.
Jazz Happens is brought to you by the Young Friends of Jazz St. Louis
and Drinks and Jazz at Nancy's,
produced by Confluence Studios. Today we have Ron Miles, Marcus Strickland, Matt Wilson. Ron plays trumpet. He also is a cornetist and composer. Marcus Strickland plays soprano, alto, and tenor saxophone. Matt Wilson, jazz drummer. Are you a percussionist as well, or you just stick behind a kit?
I play some percussion from the set, but I'm not really a percussionist.
Okay.
Person, though I was a percussion major in college.
Okay, I didn't want to assume anything.
No, that's all,
all accomplished jazz musicians in their own right. So guys, the Jazz St. Louis Artist Residency Programs, which you're here for, they asked the three of you to come together, play as a band tonight. Have all three of you ever played together as a band before? Maybe two of you may have, but like this band right here, have you guys played together before?
Not in this configuration, but I've had the pleasure of playing with Matt Wilson in Germany, I believe.
Yeah. And then, we've played together there, and then I played a lot with Ron. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, in a roundabout way, we've all played together.
Yeah, we hear that a lot from the musicians we interview, that they've played together, here and there, sort of pieced together, but never as, a unified group. So this, we think it's pretty interesting to do that.
You guys want to just kind of go around and mention your jazz influences, what brought you to your instrument, maybe that first record that really drew you to jazz, and then maybe some non-jazz influences as well.
Who wants to go first? Is it all right to mention music influences?
Of course.
Because I was never introduced to it as just jazz. It was just music that my dad played around the house.
Yeah.
And he played incredible records by Stevie Wonder, John Coltrane, Freddie Hubbard, Parliament. He just had it playing all around the house all the time. And naturally, I got drawn in by jazz music, by instrumental music in particular, at the age of 11. I think by that time, we realized how much we loved music. I mean, we had Jerry Curl around, 4 or 5 years old, and we ate a hole in our mom's car in the seats from going back and forth to the music, mm-hmm. the hot wheels and everything. So by the age of 11, we realized that we were too shy for singing, but we liked music, so we chose instrumental music.
Just kind of a general love for music as a whole. That's mm-hmm. that's good. Yeah. Ron or Matt?
I was exposed to so many different things, and I was fortunate that my parents would take me to a lot of things and do a lot of things, So in a small town in West Central Illinois, I was pretty fortunate. I had a high school friend that we were really, or junior high, we've known each other for all our lives, but during junior high stuff, we started to really get into this music. And within 1 week, one time, we saw Clark Terry in one town, Dizzy Gillespie's quartet with Bob Cranshaw, Ed Cherry, and a young Tommy Campbell. And then we drove down to Champaign-Urbana and saw Oscar Peterson. This is all in 1 week.
Cool.
This is 1981 or 80. No internet. We'd find out in the weekly newspaper, they'd have the TV listings, and they'd have all the calendar stuff for all the concerts going around.
Yeah.
We met Count Basie and Freddie Green, my friend and I. Buddy Rich yelled at us. I got to a lot of things, and fortunately my middle brother, who was lived in St. Louis for many years, got me this record called The Drums, and it was an ABC Impulse record set, three record set, and they'd have one for the bass, they have one for the saxophone, I think they have one for the piano, and they just mined all the great recordings and then some other recordings from the Impulse and other labels that was under their umbrella at that point, and had a nice booklet and everything. So it started from Baby Dodds, and at that point got modern, as we say in West Central Illinois, mm-hmm. to Barry Oshel with Anthony Braxton and Chick Corea. So it had Danny Richman, it had Paul Motion, it had Sonny Murray, it had Art Blakey, Philly Joe Jones, Elvin Jones, and with Richard Davis playing Shiny Stockings, all this stuff. So I had this three record set, and I was just as much intrigued by the Danny Richman or Chico Hamilton, and then also by Sonny Murray with Albert Eiler, and I didn't know So fortunately, my ignorance has helped me, because I didn't know sometimes with jazz schools and certain spots, you're supposed to kind of subscribe to a 5-year period of jazz that you're kind of into. And I didn't know any better. So I just thought this was all of it. So I liked the traditional stuff that I heard, but I didn't know what that was. And I liked, and when I heard Albert Eiler's Ghost, I was like, man, I like this too. Mm-hmm. So I was very fortunate to have that kind of open feel. Yeah. I've maintained that, fortunately, you know, for myself. I've maintained that openness to everything. So it's been good.
That's cool. Like a wider range of jazz, but also music in general as well.
Just music in general, yeah.
That's cool.
Cool.
Ron, influences?
I'm from Denver, and so I think that the first albums I bought, I'm sure, were 1977. So I must have bought Feel So Good by Chuck Mangione and... Mm-hmm. And Conquistador by Maynard Ferguson. I'm sure those were the first two records I bought. And then I would go to the choir room in my high school, where the choir director would get Downbeat magazine, and then I'd see like these people on the cover, like Old New Dreams or Lester Bowie and the Art Ensemble of Chicago. I'd think, what's that about? And then I'd go read old Downbeats, and I'd, this Wayne Shorter guy played with Maynard Ferguson. I should go check him out. Well, wait a minute, he's in that band Weather Report that everybody keeps talking about. Then I'd go and move to that. And so it was just, it just felt like all this music was so connected as the deeper I got into it. Mm-hmm. And so it just led me to more and more discoveries as we went along. So that was... That's kind of how it got started.
So a lot of your influence was based on self-discovery and just wanting to know more about the music. The more you discovered, the more you wanted to know.
Yeah, and I, you know, I rode the bus in Denver, and you'd have to get a record. It would be like a whole day ordeal. Uh-huh. You'd have to get the bus schedule out and take 3 buses to this one record store. And so you just imagine as I'd ride in the bus, I'd just look at the covers and just look and read the liner notes and anticipate what it was going to be like. I remember when I started playing, Miles Davis was retired, and when I was a senior in high school, he came out of retirement, and I remember going to looking at Downbeat, and Miles Davis is out of retirement, Man with the Horn, and I'd only heard, I think I'd heard Kind of Blue at that point, and Jazz at Carnegie Hall, and so then I rode my bike and got it because this was a closer record store, and rode home and put it on. I just went, what the heck is this? I mean, it's just like, I didn't know that he did electric music at all. Like, wow, that just totally shocked me. But I was in there at that point, and so it just kept leading, like I say, to more discoveries.
Cool. That's interesting. So do you guys have any advice for young musicians, jazz or otherwise? Could be anything, something that helps you out in your daily routine, or to, you know, be better at your instrument, or whatever it might be.
I think listening is the most important part.
Yeah.
That's something that we've come across with a lot of the students, that they don't really listen to the songs that they're learning. And I mean, from being a baby, we learned how to talk by listening to our parents.
Yeah.
It's the most natural way to learn it, and your ears teach you much more than somebody instructing you how to play. It's,
yeah.
You know, da-da, mama.
Yeah.
And you learn that way with music, too. It's the language.
Yeah. Language, right.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. If I'm trying to learn a song myself, I play it in the car, I play it while I'm at work.
Yeah.
You know, I try to get as much of it through osmosis as well, just really kind of submerge myself into it. Mm-hmm. Matt?
Yeah, I think listening, just remaining curious in general. You know, what I love about being around musicians like Marcus and Ron and all of our community, but even, you know, even this last couple of days, you know, just sending Ron and Marcus some music or some videos to back and forth. We still are really getting excited about all this, and to hear Brand for the last couple of nights and be really inspired, you know. But I really do feel like that aspect of it. And I think that's a community effort. So one of the things I highly recommend is as important as the headphones are, get together sometimes in open air and listen together and talk about the music. Mm-hmm. And there's also there's even in a book they talk about this, there's a hormone given off when people hear music together, whether it's live or recorded. And you bond in a completely different way. You know, so talk about it. Listen to it. Hey, check that out. Like, wow, did you hear what Philly Joe Jones did there? And so I do that with my students a lot. Man, we discover things all the time. You know, you discover little Mars in it that make us feel more human. They're not perfect, you know, but, you know, just those kinds of things. And I think that's what I get excited about. A couple months ago, we had a discussion on this tune, True Blue, that Tina Brooks, what I played it on a gig. Jeff Letter, my good friend, transcribed it. And Chris Lightcap, the bass player, was arguing with me about he put it on the wrong beat where it was. We're going this texting thing back and forth. So I said, I'm going to call on my star witness on this, my key witness. So I called Benny Green. I said, if anybody's going to know. So Benny and I listened to it together. I'm driving into the city to the new school from Purchase, and we have it through the car. And he's like, listen to it. He goes, I think it's on the end too. I agree with you. You know. So he goes, isn't this great? A couple 50-year-old guys, a bunch of 50-year-old guys are all arguing about what end of, if it's end of two or end of one or whatever. Yeah. And it was fun, man. We're like, we were in it. You know, and I was like, this is why we do this. You know, we still get super excited about it. And when I'm around older, great master musicians, they still get really excited about this stuff. Like, I remember one time I played with Buster Williams in Chicago, and while Joe Siegel's giving the lineup for the next 8 years that's going to be at the club, Buster leaned over to me and said, Matthew, we're home, baby. We're home. I just love that feeling. You know, like that, you know, this is our sanctuary. It's our place to be. So that's one of the things is go out and see people and talk to them as much as possible too. Be part of the community. That's really important.
Yeah. Our last interview was a clarinetist, Anat Cohen, and great show. She's wonderful herself, but one of her biggest things was, you know, the connection between other musicians and listeners, just forming that bond.
Friendships and relationships.
Totally. You get together, you listen to it, you play. You know, that's what a lot of it's about.
Yeah, she's a dear friend. Yeah, it's relationships. It's all about that anyway. Yeah. You know, forging these new relationships. You know, and I love that part of it. You know, I found this thing a couple of weeks ago where, I don't know how, somebody sent it to me, I guess, but I have one of these quotable things up on a thing. Somebody found this little, they made it into a meme from an interview or something, and I said, yeah, and now when I go to festivals, it takes an hour to play the set and then 2 hours to say hi to everybody. But I love that feeling. You know, when I was a kid, when I would be younger and coming up in this, I'd see how the musicians would greet each other and hang out, you know, and say, hey, how's your family? And, you know, see these guys like this, like, man, I'd like to be, that's what I want to be part of. And man, and now, you know, big part of that, you know, of just knowing all these people. You know, so I love that part of it. Man, I love the community. I just adore it. You know, to talk.
That's great. Ron, any advice for young musicians?
Yeah, I'll just amplify what the other gentleman said. And I also say, just when you're doing your listening, to be to listen to every part, not just your instrument. But one of the things we were talking about today is that sometimes the students would know the leader, but you know, who are the side people on the record? What are they doing? Going through and listening. And putting yourself just in that place and just listening all the way through a modern jazz quartet record, only listening to Percy Heath all the way through, and just listening to that. And then, because sometimes when you're on the bandstand, you it helps to put yourself in that person's perspective too, and think about, are you giving them something to play along with, you know, as opposed to them providing things for you, especially as a horn player. That's kind of our thing, and we talk a lot about horn players having a rhythm section mindset, where you're always present, not just for you to do your thing, but to be a part of it all the time. It's like rhythm section players they can't get past the velvet rope if they don't do that. But I mean, it's like the horn players can sometimes go around the side and just worry about their own thing. And so it just makes it so much more important. And then you become aware of the interaction, not only between the musicians, but the interaction between you and the audience.
Yeah.
And this constant, like I say, just being present is the thing. And these gentlemen, I mean, every time I hear them play, they are certainly mindful of that and great examples of that. So.
Good.
Yeah, I think that's good. Those are great, man, like the presence. Yeah, just being in it, you know. And I just seen this, I've just watched this sports movie a few times through. It's called In Search of Greatness. It's great to talk about Wayne Gretzky. And he scored all these goals, but when he was on the Canadian national team, he was like the king of assists. So I say to everybody now, what are you doing to assist? We can look at everybody who scored 33 or, you know, did this, but how many rebounds are you getting? How many assists are you giving from where you're at? Not just the rhythm section.
Right.
You know? Like, how are you helping everything else out with your sound and your vibe and everything like that? And I think the last couple of nights we witnessed that here with Brantford, but Anat's a great example of that. And these gentlemen are always great. You know? Ron Miles, you know, like always in there, you know. Marcus is always in there.
So without the assist, the goal may never have happened.
That's right.
You got to support.
Set it up. Yep.
All right, well, let's get into our section, the rapid-fire questions from Jazz Academy and Jazz U students.
Okay.
Curtis, you want to hit the first one?
Yeah, sure. First question is from Mikkel Hines, plays alto sax. How often do you practice while being on the road? Or do you practice while you're on the road? You just rest.
It definitely depends on my schedule and also my motivation at the time.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and fib and say that I practice 6 hours every day. But when I do practice, I make sure that I utilize the time as much as possible. And what I mean by that is to work on something that I don't know what how to do yet, instead of noodling.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And you're probably playing so much already that mm-hmm. you know that's sort of honing your chops for those songs as it is.
Yeah.
Matt, anybody else?
Well, I'm a single father of four, and I'm really busy. But I do, but I love to practice, and when I do, I'm with Marcus. It's there's a great saying I have on my refrigerator from The Karate Kid. And it's from Mr. Miyagi to Daniel. It says, not quantity of education, but quality.
Sure.
So, you know, when I sit down, I know what I want to work on, and I focused about it. And then also, there's a lot of other things that I just take in about it. If I'm reading about the music, I consider that practicing too. And then, you know, just working on breathing, working on stretching, working on whatever. But for me, just, you know, the association with the instrument all the time. I mean, I'm with it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, whether I'm teaching and playing. Or
yeah. A little bit of mental rehearsal. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. All the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And trumpet players are kind of notorious practicers. That's kind of our uh-huh. our bane. So, I do practice pretty much every day unless something very unusual happens. At some point, it's just like I say, it's kind of a brass. And also we have the advantage that we can put a mute in our instrument in a hotel and we can play and not have our neighbors like start banging on the door as opposed to having drums or a saxophone. Yeah. Those are a little bit harder sells to your neighbors as you're at a hotel. Yeah. So I generally practice every day. I mean, Matt and I were actually at Monterey last year and we were leaving early in the morning and Sean Jones walked by who was coming back from practicing because he had gotten up at like, we were leaving at like 7 or something and he was coming back from practicing and so he had already been practicing since 5 o'clock in the morning
found
the place and Sean Jones plays a lot of trumpet so if I needed any more convincing that I needed to get to the practice room, that was a nice Lord left gave me a nice reminder that day. Like, let's get to it. Sean Jones needs to practice every day, then I certainly need to practice every day.
Yeah, when the band ride to the airport was our hands were down.
Makes you feel bad about sleeping in a little bit. Man,
Sean Jones gets a lot done.
Yeah.
He probably ran 8 miles before that.
Shoot. Okay, second question is from Rayquan, Strickland. Has the church influenced anybody's playing at all?
Anybody here?
Yeah.
He means? Oh, I think it's influenced everybody. It's definitely something that it's very hard to escape. And the sound of it is definitely something that I try to harness as much as possible in my Twilight group. We go through the headache of trying to get an organ at every venue.
B3 is supposed to be portable, isn't it?
Yeah,
right.
And the organist that we have is a true organist. It's a totally different instrument than a regular keyboard. There's so many, it's almost like drums. There's so many things that you have to be independently operating at the same time to get the most out of the instrument. So I definitely go for somebody who's been in church and had to get a rise out of the crowd by getting all those sounds out of the instrument.
Yeah.
I think it's something that's inescapable. It's from the foundation of where this music came from. So yeah, I'm definitely close by.
Any other examples?
First time I played a drum set was at a church. We had this musical going on or something, and the cat had these drums, and man, it just felt really natural for me to be sitting there. I watched him a lot, You know? And then when I sat down to do it, it was kind of like, I don't remember how it was exactly, but I think it felt pretty comfortable. It's like, yeah, well, I can do this, you know? and now I do it fairly often. I mean, you know, and I write music, I feel that's very influenced by him, you know, so of all kinds. So it's definitely a big influence.
Matt and I played at your church.
Yeah.
Actually, one of the last times we were in New York.
And, yeah, great.
And I think that, you know, overall, kind of, I think that the idea of religions, you know, Judeo-Christian religions, you know, Islam and the like, is embracing mystery and embracing the fact that you don't need to know everything. And I think that when we play this music, when we start from a place of humility and accepting that we don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then we can be open to what's going to happen at that point. So, and then also just the mutual respect that you have for each other on the bandstand, mm-hmm. and your audience that you see, you know, out of the Christian religion, you talk about, you know, seeing God in every single person. And so before you start, you just kind of close your eyes and imagine that's who's sitting in all those seats. And so then you go about trying to make a joyful noise in that way. So I think, yeah, we're all greatly influenced by
that. Yeah, for sure.
Seemed like a very enlightened perspective.
Definitely. I was like, whoa.
Yeah. All right.
Romance.
So our next question comes from Keandre Higgins, flautist. What are your favorite movies? Focusing on a different art for a second. And you know, you don't have to go too deep. Maybe the first one that pops in the top of your head.
I love movies. Yeah. I watch movies all the time, and my favorite place to watch them is the theater. I love Us. At the first watch, I was absolutely confused, but my brother led me to one thing that made me understand the whole movie much better.
That just came out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, I gotta
Jordan
see it.
Peele, yes, I love him. I love Get Out. I love this movie called Dope. Not many people probably saw, I don't think many people saw it, but it really moved me the way that they showcased this time in the 90s. You know, that's when I was most cognizant of what was going on as a youngster, you know, the 90s. So it kind of hit me, that movie, Dope. I like just about any kind of movie. It doesn't have to be super deep. It could be anything from Pan's Labyrinth to another movie that Guillermo Torres did. I think it's called Titans, with these robots and action movie. And I like the fact that he can cover that breadth of genres.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible, his talent. And I just love the whole experience of it, you know, even the popcorn, the sound, everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool.
It's my favorite way to see a movie too, but unfortunately I watch a lot of them at home because I just don't have the time to run out all the time. But. Matt?
I enjoy the experience of going to the theater too. Hey boy, there's so many different eras of things. But
you did say Karate Kid. I mean,
Karate Kid is great, man. You know, I mean, as far as just a film with the great, you know, just the message too. I mean, especially for what we do as musicians, you know, everybody wants to jump in. Like, if you just learn these processes, you know, the hows of things, it's really great. I love Misery.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
I don't know, there's something about that film. I think it was maybe too because my late wife, when we were first moved to Boston, we rented it, and then I didn't get to see the rest of it, and she brought it back before I got to see the end. I was like, you did what? So I ran down and got it, and we watched, like, I had to see the last 10 minutes, you know, because I didn't see the end. I had to go to a gig. So I love those, and I love, man, there's a bunch of older movies, and I'm learning about all of them all the time. And I like documentaries a lot.
Me too.
This In Search of Greatness, watched, and I loved Black Klansman last year. That was great.
Kim
and I went to see that, my girlfriend, and that was really, really great. Nacho Libre is really great for me.
Yeah.
You know, I love comedy. You know, I'm a big student of comedy, so I like all that. And Anchorman, you can't, you know.
So. Yeah.
And but man, Black Klansman was one of the best films I've seen in years, as far as the new.
Yeah, just
right.
And so it's great. Yeah.
Can't go wrong with Will Ferrell.
No, he's hilarious, man. You know, yeah. And then yeah, there's a bunch. You know, that's a great question. I should write those down as much as I write down. I talk about records, is mm-hmm. our films like that. It's really and ask people a lot more about them. Mm-hmm. I think it's good to know.
Yeah. Ron, anything on your mind?
Oh, my son is in college. He's taking a film class, so I talk to him about films a lot. I usually just get to see films on the airplane.
Yeah.
We're going to gigs, unfortunately. But I certainly take advantage of that. There's a show though, on the Audience Network. This interview show. It's in black and white. I don't know if you guys know what this show is, but the interviewer interviews musicians and actors
mm-hmm.
and the like, and I find so many of these acting interviews to be so, they relate to music so much, particularly this Willem Dafoe interview. I remember him being like a real improviser, somebody who really gets in there and tries to really, you know, get into the character and without pre-assuming too much. And mm-hmm. so I find that to be really, really fascinating as much as anything else. But I've been writing down in my mind all these films that everybody's been mentioning. So next time I'm on the airplane, I'll be hitting up some of these.
Yeah, yeah. I'll print up some notes and send them out to everybody.
I remember as a kid in the summertime, they'd have some movies on because it's so hot in West Central. So they'd have a movie hour, like maybe on the station out of Peoria or something, they played old black and white. I remember my mom and I watching this movie, and it made me really want to write songs. I remember starting that day because it was a story of Calmer and Ruby. They wrote "Who's Sorry Now." Mm-hmm. They were a songwriting team. It was paid. Red Skelton played one of them, and I'm not sure who the other. And they were like, "Okay, we have to write a song today." It was like the guy sits down. I was like, "Man, this is so cool." They're like writing songs, like you know. So I thought, "Oh, that was an influence there." That's great.
That's cool.
You want to get this last question from the students?
Yeah, Justin Lemon, alto sax player. Do you make your own beats? And I think this one was for Marcus. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Do you make your own beats? Do you do anything outside of?
Oh yeah, I love making my own beats. When I won the Thelonious Monk saxophone competition in 2002, with the prize money, I mean I got third place. I didn't win it. I got third place. But with the prize money, I got a G5 tower, Reason software, Pro Tools, a controller, and also a very crappy bass clarinet. And the main reason that I got the crappy bass clarinet is because I wanted to play these low woodwind sounds and sample them and put them under the beat. I was heavily influenced by a beat maker by the name of Mad Lib. Also Jay Dilla, Pete Rock, the list goes on. But you know, I really got into it around that time, and it's definitely influenced my composing as well, and it's made me much more of a producer than a recording artist.
Mm-hmm.
Lately it's creeping in more and more, and very, very glad that I went down it in that lane and didn't shy from it, you know. At first I was thinking, oh, this is my hobby and
mm-hmm.
I'm gonna play with Roy Haynes tonight. But now it's like, it seems like everything is coming together and I can do it all.
Why shouldn't I be part of your art as well?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, well, one more question, we'll wrap up here. Any upcoming projects you'd like to talk about, and where can our listeners find out more about you guys?
Yeah, if you guys have social media, websites,
social media.
Any of that stuff, you know, go ahead and tell
I'm
us.
I'm on Facebook, Instagram. I have MarcusStrickland.com.
Okay.
At MarcusStrickland.com, you can get links to every single one of those
social
media outlets. And the records there, I put all the necessary links at MarcusStrickland.com.
Okay. Awesome.
For me too, MattWilsonJazz.com. It's all there. I'm pretty active on I kind of use the different ones for different reasons, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times for educational stuff, a lot of stuff I put up for about teaching or just philosophy stuff, it's on Twitter and then Instagram. But it's fun. I enjoy it very much, and I also just take breaks from it too.
Yeah.
Because I feel like whoa. But yeah, it's nice. And so Yeah, and I've always got some sort of project brewing, so it's fun. I'm excited about a piece that I'm doing at the end of May, where a project that I've done in the last couple years that Ron was also involved in, this Honey and Salt music of Carl Sandburg poetry, I'm doing with Wind Ensemble. So Jeff Letter, my good friend, I commissioned him to do the arrangements for Wind Ensemble and choir. So we're debuting that at the end of May. So I am excited about that. So it'll be nice to have another kind of medium to go out and do stuff in schools with the Wind Ensemble and choir. So it'll be fun.
Cool. And that's MattWilsonJazz.com.
MattWilson.com is, I think, is a model. So it's not me. But it's okay. You'll see.
And I don't really, I'm not so active on social media, so I'm not such a good person to ask, but I like looking what these guys are up to, because it's really, really fun. It inspires me to check it out.
Do you have a Facebook page or anything?
I think there is one, but I don't know how to get on it.
Okay.
So, but yeah.
Any projects coming up for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're playing some Honey and Salt music coming up.
Okay.
With Matt Wilson and yeah, just trying to keep practicing and answer the phone when people call.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. That
was
great.
So great.
Thanks for your time, and we're looking forward to the show tonight. We'll see you tonight.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Thanks.